Chapter 12. The One Source of Life. All of us must come to know God as the one source of life, as the only good, as Tao, as Lao Tzu explained so clearly. Lao Tzu, the great breaking force from mankind's past, speaks in his Tao about the liberating radiation power emanating from the Gnosis, just as we speak of it now in our spiritual school. The pathway about which Lao Tzu speaks drives a light shaft into our world of death in order to realize a link between the rose of the heart, the original atom in every microcosm, and the Gnostic brotherhood of salvation. In antiquity, the good philosophers who had devoted themselves to Tao were slight, subtle, dark, and far-penetrating. They were so deep that they were unfathomable. They were watchful, like men crossing a winter stream, on the alert, like men who fear their neighbors, courteous, like visiting guests, yielding, like ice about to melt, simple, like uncarved blocks of wood, empty, like valleys. Who can purify into peace the impurities of his heart? Who can he horn in Tao? When we read in the Tao Te Ching about non-action, the key to the new life, and when the spiritual school too speaks of self-surrender to the inner kingdom, many problems arise. These problems emerge due to the processes of the transfiguristic mysteries. So, for instance, there is the problem of consciousness. We speak of the consciousness of the old personality and that of the new. People generally think that the consciousness of the new man is a more extended, mightier, more beautiful and complete state of consciousness than the one we possess now. In other words, they think it is a superior stage of consciousness. That people see it in this way is evident from the fact that they often assume that the I consciousness can be cultivated or extended into a new soul consciousness. That is why most people think it strange when the need for the consciousness to perish is explained in the gospel as being necessary for gaining the consciousness of the new man. You will recognize the need for this when you understand the vast differences between the two aspects of consciousness. It is certainly not purely and simply a matter of differences in vibration. No, there are fundamental, essential differences. When the universal doctrine speaks about consciousness, it means something entirely different than what is meant by the person who looks at it from his own state of being. The consciousness one knows and possesses is a natural egocentric consciousness that has a clearly demonstrable ego center from which it emanates. This center is located in the pineal brain center that lies in the crown of the head. By and large, man regards that consciousness as his pride and joy. Man sees himself as the most highly developed entity in this nature. He is called the king of creation, but he is only king of a dialectical creation. However, the consciousness of the entity we call the new or original man does not emanate from a certain discernible center, so it cannot possibly be egocentric. It is basically eyeless, although it makes use of the fourth cerebral cavity, and via this center, governs dialectical man. The simplest way to describe the new consciousness would be to call it a complete consciousness without an eye center, which as such is completely unable to be eye central. The egoism so familiar to us all is entirely unknown to that consciousness, so you will understand that if we speak about the eyeless state of the new man, we are not doing so primarily in an ethical, moral sense, because that goes without saying, but especially, and above all, in an essential, fundamental way. This is a remarkable situation, which is perhaps difficult to comprehend. So let us give an example. You know that the physical body is composed of cells, countless cells. These cells are constructed from atoms, and it appears that, in fact, every cell has a certain consciousness. The experiences and activities of each cell are transferred to the central consciousness by means of the nervous system to which every cell is connected. Now, if the cell consciousness were equivalent to the central consciousness, the whole being in its totality would participate in the consciousness. There would no longer be a focus of consciousness, nor any I, and it would not be necessary to practice eyelessness. Roughly speaking, This is the way in which we should approach the state of consciousness of the new man. The new consciousness does not have a focus, and one should define it as a consciousness situated in the entire microcosm, although, of course, it has organs at its disposal. The microcosm does not possess a center of consciousness. No, it is a center of consciousness, on account of the collectivity of the various atoms which express the spirit of the divine plan. The microcosm in this singular condition is sometimes described in the holy language as an entity that possesses thousands of eyes both in front and at the back. If you can visualize this microcosmic condition, you will understand that it is still partial, for we distinguish microcosm, cosmos, and macrocosm. In the development of the new man, however, everything that is partial is abolished. The microcosmic conscious being enters into a cosmic consciousness and then enters the state of macrocosmic consciousness. If we put it like that and you absorb it intellectually, it is important that you understand clearly what we are trying to explain. When we no longer wish to reign, according to our dialectical state of nature, and enter fully into the microcosmic or soul consciousness, then our state of being will be that of one among many. But if our microcosmic consciousness enters into the cosmic or spirit consciousness, then it cannot be otherwise than that countless microcosms will enter into a collective, omnipresent consciousness. Then one can speak of a total unification, as all separation is cancelled out. One can no longer speak of a multitude, but only of a unity. It will be even more glorious when the cosmos enters into the macrocosm, the divine all-revelation. Then all the multitude of forms manifested in former times will have become completely one in Him who is the absolute universal love. So non-action means a dialectic approximation of the new consciousness. It is an effort to leave behind everything dialectical with its results in order to be able to enter the tremendous divine development which can only result in unification with God. Non-action is recommended by Lao Tzu to eliminate as much as possible the enormous differences between these two worlds and provide a basis for the genesis of the powers of the new consciousness that are potentially hidden in the rose of the heart. That is why the true pupil becomes eyeless, no longer attached to anything whatsoever. His life demonstrates his self-surrender, the cleansing of his heart from the fire of emotion. The eye will try to neutralize itself as much as possible so that the soul life can begin. Those of you who undergo this process of approximation with joy will receive a stream of merciful Gnostic radiations which will guide the entire being into the field of absolute quietude, into the true priestly tranquility, the state of peace in which the great holy work of building the new temple has to be carried out. That we may soon testify with Lao Tzu. I know because I have died myself, and through the Spirit have risen again. What corrupted me has met its ruin. I have entered eternity.